Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
I said we were going to do it, and we're doing it. Another fine Monday show for Catholic Answers Live. That's always, it's easy to have a fine show when Trent Horn is your guest for 2 hours, and that is what has happened today. Trent is our guest. Our number, 888-318-7884. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and the topic for this hour is why are you pro-choice? If you are in favor of keeping abortion legal in any form, you qualify as pro-choice, and give us a call, 888-318-7884, if you would like to discuss your reasons for that. And that is exactly what we were trying to do, have reasonable conversation. We are broadcasting from the Hawaii of the continental United States, San Diego. Do you like that, Trent? The Hawaii of the continental United States?
I think that accurately describes San Diego. I challenge anyone else to say which part of the United States
is more Hawaii-ish.
Is the Hawaii of the continental United States. Yeah. I mean, the closest, I mean, maybe like Miami, Fort Lauderdale area.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly.
Oh, they could claim,
It is a tad more humid there, but there is just something very special about San Diego. And you're right. You and the others are blessed to be there. And I'm actually hoping to relocate back there myself here within the next few months. So you can have me in the studio once a week instead of here on Skype, which is fine, but it's always nice to be there live with you.
Yeah, you're broadcasting from Arizona, the Arizona of the continental United States. 888-318.
It's kind of like the – Arizona is like the Hawaii of the sun.
Well, of the sun, yes.
Yeah.
Right. It's summertime there now, and soon it will just be oven. Right.
Well, not too soon. In Arizona in March, it's kind of like every day you just want to run around outside because you're like, it's 72 degrees out. It's nice. But it's like it's always every day is like a little grain of sand in an hourglass and you see it fall through and you just dread when the last one goes and it's 110 every day.
You're a poet, Trent Horn. You are a
and
poet.
I didn't even know it.
I'm really looking for it. But your feet know it. They're Longfellows. No? Okay.
Oh, very good.
Keegan, driving from Denver to Minneapolis, listening on 90.1 FM. Keegan, you are on with Trent Horn. Why are you pro-choice?
Hi, Trent. I'm pro-choice. My mother is a Catholic, an American, and works for Planned Parenthood. So she raised me as both a Catholic, I'm now lapsed, and a good feminist. So I guess I believe in the autonomy of the woman's body and a woman's right to be able to choose what she can. I wanted to respond in particular to something you said to the last caller, and I think this is what frustrates me a lot with pro-lifers and kind of AM talk radio in general is you spewed a little bit of misinformation saying that in the third trimester, they're going to inject poison into the baby's heart or the fetus, into the womb to take the baby out. And that they might as well just have the baby because in that point, the baby has to come out one way or the other. But, I mean, I can get my mother who works Planned Parenthood on the phone to get the medical terms out there. As far as I know, are you saying that, medically speaking, it's not for the woman that they're taking that fetus out, that it's for her health? Or maybe I misheard you in that last call.
There's different reasons people give for third trimester abortion. A lot of time, it's not necessarily even for the woman's health. It's because a fetal anomaly has been detected, which could be something even as mild as Down syndrome. Other times, a woman may be experiencing some kind of health complication that would result in the end, necessitate an end of the pregnancy or delivering the child. But to me, if we're in the third trimester, what benefit is there to abortion versus just delivering the child? The only difference is the child dies. To me, half the people involved now have died, and it seems like a failed medical procedure. Other times, there's other reasons people give for third trimester abortions. Some people don't access abortion till then. Some people don't even discover they're pregnant until a third trimester. But really, what the Supreme Court said is that some states can ban abortion in the third trimester if they want to. They don't have to, but they have to leave an exception for someone's physical, emotional, or psychological health, but those can be used to justify practically anything. And as I said, we are one of the few countries that allows abortion. And in Colorado, which I think Sire, our screener, said you're driving from Colorado, Dr. Warren Hearn does third trimester abortions right there in that city in Boulder. So, yeah, to me, I don't see why we ever need to end the child's life, especially in that case.
Oh, where did our caller go?
Hi, hello.
Hey, call. Did you have a response? I'm having a little technical problem, Trent. I apologize for that. I do not know exactly what is happening there, but again, 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. We go now to Tammy in Columbus, Ohio, listening on 8:20 a.m. Tammy, you're on with Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live. Why are you pro-choice?
Because I think some of your parameters are just a little bit too narrow. I would agree with you about third trimester abortions. I think that unless the woman's life is in grave danger, that's a no-go. But I'm thinking to a young girl who has been raped. And Trent, I heard you once on the show say, we don't even put the rapist to death. But what if you have an 11 or 12-year-old daughter and she has been raped and she doesn't even really understand exactly what is happening to her? And her body is immature, although she's had a menstrual cycle, so she could get pregnant. And she's got little skinny hips, and her body's not developed enough to have a baby. And you're saying, no abortion, no exception. To me, in that case, you're sacrificing one child for another.
What do you mean by sacrificing her? Are you saying that I would allow my daughter to die?
I think what you're saying is, or indeed, is, okay, we believe in no abortion, no time, no exception. So you've got a child who is still a child, right, and you're going to make that child go through a pregnancy as maybe a middle schooler or a fifth or sixth grader, deliver a child, and what is that going to do to her body? What's that going to do to her psychological well-being?
Let me ask you a question. Suppose I had a daughter who's 11 or 12, and I explained, children at 11 or 12 know where usually almost always know where babies come from, and they're starting to learn about puberty. And for me, I have never met a child under the age of 10 who wasn't coached by their parents who is pro-choice. Every child I met under the age of 10 who just looks at the issue with fresh eyes is pro-life and thinks killing babies is terrible. So suppose you were speaking there to an 11 or 12-year-old girl who's pregnant and she's trying to figure out what to do, and she says to you, but I don't want to kill my baby. What would your response be to her?
My response would be that if I found out she was raped immediately, let's say not molested, it's different if she's molested and she's further along pregnant, but let's say she was out riding her bike and a terrible human being walking the face of the earth raped her, and I got her to an emergency room, I would want her to have a morning after pill, and by your narrow definition of abortion, that would be a no-go either.
So Tammy, let me make sure I understand. You're saying if this little girl says to you, I don't want to kill my baby, you would make her kill her baby?
I don't know that if my little girl, in a state of trauma, having been grabbed by an adult male and raped, would be able to say that. I mean, we don't let children make decisions because their brains are not mature. Their bodies aren't mature at that age either.
Tammy, let me try this another way. You and I both agree the rape of a child is a horrible situation. It's absolutely terrible. Both of us agree. Okay, would you agree, like when you were talking about the rape of an 11 or 12-year-old, whatever it may be, we should not inflict acts of violence against children. You would agree with that?
I would agree with that, and I see where you're going with this, and I think your logic is faulty.
Where am I going?
You're going to tell me that we're creating an act of violence against an unborn child or an act of violence against her by forcing her to have an abortion. Tell me how in that situation the morning after pill is the same as an abortion?
Well, Tammy, I will answer your question. We don't know exactly what mechanism the morning after pill uses to prevent pregnancy. Now, the ethical and religious directives of the Catholic Church from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops does allow the use of contraceptives for rape victims to prevent ovulation or fertilization. So the Catholic Church, if someone's a victim of rape, the church understands that a person has the right to defend themselves against their rapist's attack, including preventing the rapist's sperm from fertilizing one of their eggs. So if I had a small child who had just been raped, certainly I would want to prevent conception and prevent the rapist's attack. But if the baby comes into existence and we have a child here and we agree we should not inflict an act of violence against children, then that shouldn't matter how old the child is, whether they're an 11-year-old victim of rape or whether they're a child in the womb. And finally, what I would say is that this child is going to be the victim. They are going to have trauma to heal from the rest of their lives. They will require compassionate care to help them. But what I will absolutely not do to a child is add to them the trauma of them knowing they were an accomplice to the death of their own child. I would protect my daughter and protect my granddaughter or grandson, that the only person who would be harmed would be the rapist, and he would be harmed thoroughly through our legal system. And I believe that children should be protected, whether they're a child who's been a victim of rape, a child who's been conceived in rape, whoever an innocent person is, our violence should never go towards them. And as I said to the previous call on the other show, we should always learn to endure evil, to endure suffering, and not inflict it on others to try to reduce the suffering we have. That's not the answer to be living in a civilized world. So something to think about, and thanks for calling in.
Thank you indeed. Tammy, we have to take a quick break. Trent, we'll be right back with more. Why are you pro-choice on Catholic Answers Live right after this?
Hi, this is Trent Horn. Are you looking for a dynamic Catholic speaker to present at your next conference or parish event? Well, we've got a whole host of speakers who are eager to share the truth of the Catholic faith in your community. Go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com to get all the information you need to make your event the talk of the town. That's CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com.
Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. This Lent, plant seeds of faith in the hearts and minds of your non-Catholic friends and family. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today. You can order your copies of Why We're Catholic by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host. Our guest this hour is Trent Horn, and our topic, why are you pro-choice? If you are a pro-life person, we just ask you to hold off on that call till another day. We do shows where we talk to, as a matter of fact, almost every day we'll talk to a pro-life person. But today we reserve it for those who want to maintain at least some portion of the status quo regarding abortion, keeping it legal. Whether you are personally opposed or not, we can, we'll call that pro-choice if you believe that it is a woman's right to choose to take the life of that child. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-31-TRUTH. We go now to Karid in the Hawaii of Florida, Pensacola, Florida, listening on 103.3 FM. Karid, why are you pro-choice?
So I think it's a little something a lot of people have tried to touch on. Obviously, as people of faith, you're very interested on the soul of a person involved, and obviously killing something with a soul is a big no-no. I don't want to mince words or argue or anything, and personally my belief is at a certain point you're just an amalgamation of cells. You don't exactly have a soul yet. So people who are unfortunately have a rough night out before they may even realize they're pregnant and lose what could have been a person, I'm not going to really mourn the loss of it. It was a small amount of cells, and you probably won't even notice it. And an egg that gets fertilized from a sperm and doesn't bind to the wall of the womb is, again, no significant loss, as in no soul was magically transferred into that cell at the moment of conception.
Okay. Kareed, let me is it Karid? Kareed?
Probably
how do you pronounce your name?
Better answer on when a soul actually comes into play here.
Oh, okay. First, where I can use it. Karid or Karid?
It's Khalid.
Khalid. Oh, sorry. It was misspelled. Khalid. Okay. Let me address your point. Number one, my arguments against abortion are ones even atheists can embrace. And some atheists do embrace these arguments. They don't rely on the presence of a soul. Now, in traditional theology and philosophy, a soul is the principle of life. It's what makes living things different than dead things. So even like plants and animals have souls, but only humans have immortal souls. Now the church has not defined actually what precise moment you have a soul. It actually hasn't defined that. It would make sense that it's at conception, at the beginning when your living body comes into existence. But what the church teaches is that human beings deserve respect simply in virtue of their humanity. And that's the argument I make, is that human beings have a right to life. And the soul can't be detected empirically, but a human being's existence can be. We can know from science that at fertilization, a new genetically distinct, complete human organism comes into existence. A new genetically distinct human organism that will mature and develop over time. So number one, I guess we could talk about the soul if you want. I mean, I'd be curious as to when you think the soul enters the body, like how you would know that. Or we can just talk about the humanity of the unborn child. We can detect that empirically, that the unborn is a living, growing human being. So why can't they have rights? I'm happy to talk about either with you. What do you think?
If you want to talk about the humanity of the unborn, it kind of goes in my mind to the issue of in vitro fertilization. Eggs are artificially inseminated and then mm-hmm. put into a human body. Not all of them are used. Are they still, by virtue of being in a fertilized egg, conferred the rights of humanity or no?
A embryo is a human being from conception until the seventh week of life. So the term fertilized egg is kind of a misnomer. There, upon fertilization, the egg no longer exists. You have a new distinct organism. So fertilized egg is like born fetus. That'd be like saying if you killed a newborn and you said, well, why does a newborn have any rights? It's just a born fetus. Well, when it's born, it's not a fetus anymore. Much the same at fertilization, you have a new human organism. And with in vitro fertilization, multiple embryos are created, and you're right, not everyone is implanted. Some are not implanted, and they're either put in cold storage or they are destroyed. And some are implanted, but then they are aborted later through a process called selective reduction. And I would say that's wrong, because you shouldn't kill human beings no matter how old or young they are.
Okay. This kind of pushes into the potentiality of personhood argument, and I appreciate your insight and your answers. I don't dare pretend to be any wiser than anybody else on the face of the earth. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Colleen. Next time we'll get your name right, too. I promise. We'll work on that. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you are a pro-choice person and would like to share with us why you are pro-choice, today is your day. We're asking pro-life folks to hold on and talk to us another day. We go now to the Hawaii of Oregon, Portland, Oregon. Gerhardt listening on 88.3 FM. You are on with Trent Horn. Gerhardt, why are you pro-choice?
I would hate to say that I'm necessarily pro-choice, only except that you're kind of forcing me into that position. I would restrict it, you know, very greatly. I think it's overused, and I think it should only be used for medical reasons. But I would view it as more of a necessary evil than anything else. I'm thinking of people who have genetic reasons why they shouldn't get married, but do get married, and the results were catastrophic. And then there's, you know, children who are, if they are detected in the womb, to have like gross birth defects that are not repairable. Then letting the child come into the world, in the old days, back before we had such advances in medicine, most of those kids wouldn't be viable within, you know, like a week after they were born anyway. But because of advances in medical science, you've got children who are basically sentenced to a life sentence with really horrible things in their lives because, you know, that choice to, you know, decide one way or the other in the womb was taken out of the picture either for one reason or another.
Okay.
And so,
Gerhardt, I see where you're coming from here, and I guess you are thinking of very severe birth defects, you know, maybe something like congenital heart disease or brain malformation, things like Edwards syndrome or maybe even anencephaly, who knows. There's certainly serious birth defects that can leave permanent effects for the rest of one's life or result or be terminal and the child will die days, weeks, months, or years after birth. And these are tragic cases. But we have to ask ourselves, how do we as civilized people respond to the sick, to sick children, to dying children? Do we care for them and comfort them as they die, or care for them and comfort them to accommodate whatever disability they may have, or do we kill them? And we believe that medicine should kill those who we think will have more difficult lives than us. That, I think that's the question. So to see what you really think about this, let me pose this question to you. What if we only discovered one of these serious birth defects in a child after they're born? Like, we think that they're healthy. We had a faulty prenatal test. They're born and they're lying there on the table and we see they have one of these birth defects. Would you justify euthanizing a newborn who had one of these serious birth defects that you think would justify abortion? Would that also justify infanticide for you?
I would not justify it, no.
Why not?
These things happen. Accidents occur, and sometimes you just have to live with them. But
So Gerhardt, let me see what you're saying. You would not kill an infant that had one of these serious defects, but you would kill an unborn child. Or you're not you, but you would say it'd be okay to kill an unborn child through abortion, but not an infant. So it seems to me that what's justifying abortion here to you is not the birth defect. It's simply that the child is not born yet. But why should that matter?
Last part.
You want me to repeat that?
Yes, please.
It's not the birth defects that justify abortion for you, because abortion is the killing of a human life. You just told me you would not kill an infant who had one of these conditions, but you would think it should be legal to kill an unborn child through abortion who had one of these defects. Why is it okay to end an unborn child's life for this reason, but not a born child?
Well, once the child is born and outside of the womb, then it's a different story. But if, you know, you can keep the child alive as long as you can that way, but seriously, if there's any way to prevent suffering.
But Gerhard, you don't think if there's any way to prevent suffering because you won't do it for a born child. All I'm hoping you will do is take a step back. It's not birth defects that are motivating you to support abortion in these cases. Rather, it's visibility. The idea of a child being out of the womb, lying on a table or in like, you know, one of those, you know, metal weighing trays or plastic trays in a hospital, the thought of killing that squirming 7-pound child, even if they have a birth defect, as you said, well, sometimes these things just happen. And so we just have to help this child. We can't, it's quote unquote too late. The idea of ending this child's life because they have a birth defect, it kind of makes us sick to our stomach. We can visualize it, but we can't visual, abortion is just too abstract. But if you really visualize the dismemberment, the vacuum suction, all the things that happen to this unborn child, it should fill us with the same repulsion that it would even to painlessly euthanizing a newborn infant. Both are human beings, just at different stages in their levels of development, and we shouldn't discriminate against children based on their age or their level of development.
Gerhard, thanks for your call. We'll be right back with more. Trent Horn, why are you pro-choice on Catholic Answers Live?
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Can you trust the basis of the Christian faith? The Christian faith is under constant attack today in numerous ways, but the attack that does the most damage is the one that asks a deceptively simple question. What if your faith is based on a myth? The skeptics come with arguments to cast doubt in numerous ways, often attacking the reliability of the New Testament and the Gospels. And the sad news is that most people don't know how to answer these charges. The good news is that there are answers to each and every one of them. Good, solid answers. That's why Catholic Answers Studios has just released Jimmy Akin's new DVD, The Dawn of Christian History. With his characteristic wit and passion as a master storyteller, Jimmy takes you through an exciting detective story that reveals how history supports the Christian faith. Order your copy of The Dawn of Christian History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Looking for the best in solid Catholic resources that can answer your questions on all things Catholic? Looking for books, audio, and DVDs by the top Catholic thinkers and speakers on the planet today? Stop in today and visit the shop at Catholic.com. All of our resources are time-tested, apologist-vetted, and trustworthy and faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. There's truly no better source for solid Catholic resources anywhere on the Internet. And now, we've made your online shopping even more affordable with $5 flat rate shipping within the continental U.S. When you're shopping for great Catholic books, CDs, DVDs, and more, turn to someone you can trust. Visit the shop at Catholic.com today. That's shop.catholic.com.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
I was raised in an Italian Catholic home. We went to church. That's what you did. And now that I'm older, I can't thank my parents enough for allowing me to know about our Lord, because ultimately the base that they gave me kept pulling me back to the Catholic Church, even though I wandered as a young adult.
The Doctor is In with Ray Guarendi, weekdays 1 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest this hour, as he was first hour, and we're happy to have him because we get a lot of good discussion when Trent's around. And the discussion today is about abortion. If you are a person who is either A, in favor of the broad access to abortion, or B, maybe you're opposed, but you think that it should continue with its legal standing, today is your day to give us a call. We'd love to discuss it with you. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. We go now to Erica in Jackson, Mississippi, listening on 93.3 FM. Erica, you are on with Trent Horn. Why are you pro-choice?
Hi. I am actually in Jackson, Michigan, and I feel like you are just pushing your beliefs on me And I don't understand why I need a law forcing me to believe what you believe.
Erica, I'm not saying you or anyone else has to believe what I believe. I'm
but
just
I would
saying
have
that
to live my life that way.
Well, let me finish. You can believe whatever you want. People can believe whatever they want. I just think the law should make it illegal to kill children either before or after birth. And no one's beliefs should justify harming children. And I think that's quite reasonable.
States separate in America. I thought this was the land of the free and we're all immigrants and we can believe whatever we want. That's what makes us so great.
Erica, I just said people can believe whatever they want, but don't you agree people shouldn't be able to use their beliefs to hurt others?
Which is what you're doing to me by making this a law. Why can't you believe it in yourself, but
Erica,
keep it out of the government?
How am I hurting you by making it illegal for you or anyone else to kill a child before or after birth? How does that hurt you?
There are some religions that believe that women are less than human and are treated horribly in other countries because that's what they believe. I don't want that to become a law.
Absolutely.
Here.
And the argument that I'm making for abortion, that the unborn should be protected, is not a religious argument. It's based on human rights. And so I agree with you that if somebody's religion says it's okay to kill a woman because she, you know, dared to go outside without a male escort, I'd say that their religious beliefs are wrong and society shouldn't tolerate them. The law should protect women in those cases, much the same way the law should protect unborn children if parents have mistaken beliefs about the unborn and think it's okay to kill them. Would you at least agree with this statement? The law should protect children from the beliefs of their parents that might hurt them. Is that sensible?
I think that everyone has their own ideas about hurt and pain and what causes them and where it comes from. I don't think we're all the same, no.
Okay, so Erica, let me give you an example then. There's some places where people think it doesn't hurt a child if you marry a 10-year-old. They think marrying a 10 or 11-year-old doesn't hurt them. It's a completely fine thing to do. Do you think that that's wrong?
I think that that is wrong. I don't like that idea, but we did that in this country.
Now let me take it one step further. Do you think there should be a law that says you can't marry a 10-year-old?
I'm not sure. I think that the government needs to stay more out of our lives.
Erica, do you think there should be laws that say you can't make 5-year-olds work in coal mines?
Well, I don't think that parents should be sending their 5-year-old. I think parents can decide that. I think they're smart. And that they wouldn't do that.
Well, Erica, are there parents who do end up hurting their children sometimes?
Right now, today, yes.
Okay.
They're everywhere.
What should we do to protect those children from their parents?
Well, that's a tough call, isn't it?
No.
That's a good
It's
question.
Not a tough call at all. We make a law that says you can't hurt your child. You cannot violate their basic rights. You can't sexually abuse them. You can't. Here, let's go really basic, really basic. A mom is at home with her 2-year-old and the 2-year-old is screaming a bunch and the mom just decides to kill the 2-year-old because she's had enough. Should the law prevent her from killing her 2-year-old?
Well, that probably happens now in places where is right here in America. And yeah, I hope there's laws that protect that. Maybe, that's something to consider. Sure. I don't want that to be
Let's try it again. I don't know. I want to have a good conversation with you. This is an important issue, but I really have to be honest with you. I am utterly baffled, boggled, if you will, by your hesitancy to just say the law should keep parents from killing or sexually abusing their children. I don't understand your hesitancy about enforcing laws that keep big people from hurting little people. Why are you so, why are you hesitant? Like, you think this idea that it's more important not to tell people what to do than to protect children. Why not tell people what to do if they're being monsters?
To this country to escape oppression from other places. And I wonder if there are many situations I can think of where a woman should be able to control what's happening and maybe just does not have the support. You're talking about all this great support that you give and that's out there for people, but it does not exist.
But even, well, that's not true. It is there. And even if it weren't there, parents should not kill or abuse their children. And, you know, and I guess, unfortunately, I think we've hit a bit of an impasse here because I noticed that you've been kind of talking when I've been talking, so we're not really having a two-way conversation here. To me, I don't understand this kind of like an idol in our world today. There is an idol that people worship, the idol of non-judgmentalism. It's like in the Old Testament, people worshiped idols to Baal, to other pagan deities, and that was the center of their lives. They would kill their children for these idols. They would abuse their children sexually for these idols. And people say, oh, those are backwards, primitive people. But what I see here in America today are people who serve the idols of autonomy and non-judgmentalism. I can't tell people that they're wrong, and people should be free to do what they want. To me, those are more barbaric than the idols of Baal and the other idols of the Old Testament. And so if you're listening out there, I think the pro-life movement is a reasonable claim that all human beings have equal rights and dignity, should be protected under the law from any beliefs that would exploit or mutilate or kill them. I think it's very sensible. You could believe that, the pro-life view, that all human beings should be treated equally under the law with dignity and their basic rights protected. Or you could worship the idols of autonomy and non-judgmentalism and let people kill, butcher, because you're afraid of telling other people what to do. I'm not afraid to tell people what to do if they are committing acts of evil, and you shouldn't be either.
Erica, thank you very, very much for that call. We do appreciate that so many folks are willing to call and have these conversations with us. It's helpful to all of us. 888-318-7884 is the number. We go now to Roman in Amarillo, Texas, listening on 1360 AM. Roman, you are on with Trent Horn. Why are you pro-choice?
Hey, thank you guys for opening your lines to opposing views. First off, I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I'm not necessarily opposed. I mean, I'm not necessarily pro-choice. I find a hard time refuting the pro-choice movement from a Catholic standpoint because, I mean, from a Catholic point of view, aborted fetuses go to heaven, right?
We have a hope for their salvation. Because God is merciful, and especially I hope if the church desires their baptism, but there is a hope. It isn't taught that children who die before baptism automatically go to heaven, but we have a hope for their salvation in a merciful God.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think that that's only reasonable to assume that a good God would be merciful. But if that's true, and I mean, I think that heaven is preferable to living on earth, mm-hmm. How could we possibly condemn anybody for killing a child if it sends that child to heaven?
Because the child still has a right to live, that as a Catholic, we would believe that only God can directly take human life. Life is a gift from him. We don't have dominion over human life. When we choose to take life, directly take innocent life, we violate a person's right to life. It's not within our authority to do that. Only God has that authority. And if we believed that, then why not kill children immediately after they're baptized? Since we know they're going to heaven, we definitely know that. That would, you know, but you wouldn't kill a child after they're baptized or kill somebody the second after they step out of the confessional, because what's more important than just quote unquote getting people to heaven is that we should get them to heaven through good ways, not through evil. As the Bible says, do not conquer evil with evil, but conquer evil with what is good. And so even if you're aiming for a good end, you can't use evil means to get there. That would just be wrong. So that's how I would respond to that. And thanks for your call.
Thanks, Roman. We got to go to a break. We'll be right back with more Why Are You Pro-Choice with Trent Horn right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you. Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
This year's Catholic Answers National Apologetics Conference is proud to announce our very special keynote speaker, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke. Do you have your tickets? Early bird pricing ends July 2nd. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to the faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being with us here on our great big Monday show. Trent Horn, both hours, and they have, to me, they've gone quickly, even though it's a very challenging topic. We're very appreciative of the callers who are willing to call and share why they are pro-choice. And if you're a pro-life caller, we still love you. You just got to call on a different day. Let's go now to Donna in Puyallup, Washington. Donna, why are you pro-choice?
Okay. You might have just influenced me to change my mind. I want to share that with you.
You said
something very compelling that just struck a chord with me.
I've always voted pro-choice.
Mm-hmm. Because I think the government does not have a right to tell women or anyone what to do with their bodies, and I'm a less government kind of person, but mm-hmm. you just said something, I just want to share that with you, so I stayed on the line, that affected me when you said to Erica that it's not okay to kill your children at any time. I mean, if they were 2 years old, you don't do it. And so, because at my base level, I am extreme pro-life, but I just think the government doesn't have a right to be up in it. But when you made the comment that we protect children after they're born. I mean, if it were a two-year-old and mom was having a bad day, would you kill your child? No, you wouldn't. And so I think you just rearranged my thinking. I just want to let you know that on pro-choice.
Donna, that is that's very encouraging to hear, and I'll pray for you to continue to think about that. And I tell you what we'll do. I'd like to give you some more food for thought to think about the issue. Stay on the line. I would like our call screener to get your address, and I will send you a complimentary copy of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, so you can see even more where I'm coming from on this issue. But that's very heartening to hear, and I hope the book will do well for you. So do stay on the line, and our call screener, Emily, will get your address and send you a complimentary copy of my book. So thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Donna, very much for that call. That's the first book Trent gave away today, too. And usually he's given away piles of books. I do not know what happened with Trent today. But congratulations on getting the first book out of Trent. Let's go to Randall in Billings, Montana, listening on 1240 AM. Randall, thank you for your call. Why are you pro-choice?
Thank you for taking my call. Hey, you know, I really appreciate the abortion issue. It's very controversial, and for that reason and for the fact that many people have different opinions on when life actually begins, I have a difficult time when you start making laws against certain things that we're still not even sure of it. I mean, and also there's the whole term of born and unborn, and if we believe that life actually begins at conception, I'm kind of confused as to why we differentiate that. And then lastly, I'd like to mention that if you want to kind of get biblical about it, I mean, when God created Adam, he actually, there was a body there. He formed Adam out of the dust of the soul, of the earth. And then he said, God breathed the breath of life into Adam, and he became a living soul. So even back at the beginning of history, it appears that life began literally when God breathed life into that the human. And I saw, and I have a question about the difference between a soul and a human, because that was brought up earlier too. We're calling fetuses children, and so it's just a really a blurred thing. And I was wondering if you could touch on some of that.
I'd be happy to break that down for you, Randall. First, number one, Genesis is a genre of epic poetry using figurative language, so it may not be literal that God actually, our very first parents were actually fashioned from literal dirt, much the same way that the sky is not composed of a literal dome with water on top of it that's called the firmament. That just may be poetic or phenomenological language. But even if it were literal, even if it were the case that Adam was created miraculously when God breathed life into dirt, would you agree that every human being who comes into existence, they come into existence differently? They don't come from dirt. They come from a mom and dad, right?
Yes.
So then it may be different when they begin to exist. And we can actually use science to determine this, that upon conception, the sperm and egg no longer exist, but we have a living, growing human being who takes in, we say the breath of life. Well, what is the breath of life? The breath of life is oxygen going into our lungs, breathing. Well, even as an embryo, an unborn child takes in nutrients through the walls of their cells. Then as they get bigger, they take in oxygen through their umbilical cord. So a baby in the womb does take in the breath of life, just in different ways than we do. And we shouldn't treat them differently just because they live and grow differently than us.
When does the baby actually take the breath of life in the womb? I mean, have we established a time for that?
What do you mean, Randall, by the breath of life? You mean taking in oxygen?
What is your alternative? Because we can dispute that, but we need to have another alternative answer then before we can make a law about it.
Well, the breath of life, that's a phrase that described how God brought Adam into existence. And among ancient people, would you agree our knowledge of being alive is better than the times of the people in the Bible? Like, we can see inside the body we know about human anatomy more. In the time of Scripture, basically, you were alive if you could breathe. If you breathed, you were alive. When you stopped breathing, you died. And so people understood that to be alive means to have the breath of life. Now, we understand more that that's backwards, that it's not breathing that makes you alive per se. It's being alive that allows you to breathe. I mean, when you stop breathing, you die. Or when your heart stops beating, you die. When your brain dies. But what makes us alive isn't just being able to expand our lungs. It's that our cells grow and develop, they organize and they're coordinated, and so they grow and multiply along a directed path. So an unborn child in the womb, before they even have lungs, for example, they are growing and developing. They are alive. When they need lungs, they will grow them. When they need a heart, which is 18 days after conception, which is before basically all abortions take place, they have a heart. So it's very clear to me that the unborn are alive, and you can know that even if you're not a Christian, you can know that. But I'm also happy to discuss what you meant by human and soul, but do you have any other clarifications on that, or?
Well, because even when you brought up the lungs and the heart, I mean, you know, they haven't even developed yet until a certain point in, you know, in the fetus. So, you know, I think, and this is my point, because I would never argue with you about when, I mean, because that's why it's so difficult to make a law about something when.
Well, no, Randall, I think we can, let's go simple. Yeah. Randall, let's just try something simple. If you're growing, you must be alive, right?
I'm sorry?
If something is growing, if it's growing by cellular reproduction, if something's growing, it must be alive.
I don't know if that's necessary. You can grow skin for a burn victim. You can grow.
Right. Is
skin
it? But is that? Is that? It's. I agree with you. That skin is not a life. It's not a person, but it's living tissue. Because, like, if you grow skin for a burn victim, you have to give them living tissue, not dead tissue, right?
Well, they're saying now that you can even create a human being out of DNA, and then back even in biblical times, it was, you know, it was illegal to spill the seed because that was considered, you know, life as well. And then you also bring up with what if a woman is being irresponsible, or if she's, you know, my mother was playing volleyball when she was pregnant and she was injured and could have lost a child. Would that be a negligent homicide? I mean, how do we look at all the issues that happen with women, you know, maybe not even their fault, that
we just apply to it the same standards that we had prior to when abortion became legal. So people seem to think it's hard. People forget there was a time when it was illegal to abort an unborn child. It was illegal to harm an unborn child. And during that time when abortion was illegal, people did not go to jail because they had miscarriages. Just as born people die naturally after birth, unborn children die naturally before birth sometimes. But that doesn't mean we don't have laws to prevent the killing of either born or unborn people. And I would just say that it's very clear from a biological perspective, and you can see this in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, that the unborn are human beings for three reasons. They're growing, so they must be alive. They have human DNA, so they must be human. And they're a whole organism. They're not tissue. They're not clumps of cells. They are able to grow and develop. The fact that we call them embryos and fetuses, those words, if you look at any medical dictionary, refer to the stage of development in the life of a human being. So it's very clear scientifically the unborn are human beings. Where people disagree is how we should value them. That's the disagreement. But I think the argument saying we should not value the unborn as human beings with a right to life like you or I, they don't work. I'm fine to hear people who disagree with that, but I think that's a debate we need to have.
Thanks, Randall. Going to try to move to another call, try to get everybody in today. Sasha in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, listening on 104.3 FM. Could you, I hate to ask you to go quickly, but could you go quickly, Sasha? Why are you pro-choice?
Well, for myself and my own personal belief, I'm not necessarily pro-choice. I am pro-life. That's just something that I have decided for myself. But when it comes to pro-choice and that law, I feel like I'm a firm believer in obeying the laws of the land. And if it's a law currently, then women should be able to, you know, make that decision for themselves. My thing is, when it comes to pro-choice and the people who are trying to make abortion illegal, what about those who are... So what you're saying is you value life, right?
I believe all human beings have a right to life. Yes.
Yes. So when it comes to life and death and somebody taking the life of an unborn child or carrying it through to birth and not allowing them to have an abortion, that is supporting life. That is for life. Now,
Sasha, I'm sorry, but real quickly, you got to tell us why you're pro-choice, because we're heading up to the very end.
Yes, sorry. So what about those people who are on life support?
Okay, all right. Okay,
That's a great thing. Someone who is on life support, if someone is dying, we are not obligated to use extraordinary means to keep them alive, like a heart-lung machine. If someone is dying, we can allow the natural process of death to take place. But an unborn child in a healthy pregnancy is not dying. They are growing. They are healthy. They are doing what any child should be doing. They are not dying. What causes their death is abortion. And so abortion kills a healthy child and ends their life and violates their right to life, whereas taking someone who is ill, who is brain dead, for example, off of life support, that doesn't directly kill an innocent person. It lets the dying process happen in a natural way for someone whose life has been lost.
Sasha, thank you so much for the call. Thanks for everyone who shared why they are pro-choice with us today. Trent Horn, thank you for an excellent couple of hours.
You too, Si. Thank you so much for hosting.
If you go to Catholic.com, you can take a look and order even Trent's brand new book, What the Saints Never Said. Do that. You'll be happy that you did. Tomorrow, 2 hours, open forum. Any question you got, we're willing to take. See you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.